Hello, I'm Juniper Rain, and welcome to the first ever episode of Juniper's Cabinet of Curiosities. Every Friday, starting in October, I'll be here to tell you a new scary story. Each story will come with a visual depiction posted on our Instagram and RSS feed. Today's story is a story about the darkness lurking within us and what happens when it goes too far. So put your headphones in, grab a blanket, and let's dive in. I need to record this before it's too late. My name is Valerie. I live alone now at a condo on 700 Westbrook Avenue in Maryland. A few months ago, the love of my life broke my heart, and ever since then, my life has really been unraveling. I know, breakups are tough, but it goes beyond that. You'll see. Let me start from the beginning. The summer after high school, I met the most amazing guy. He was tall, handsome, and smart. The only downside to this is he was moving to Maryland come September for school. I had already accepted a slot at the local community college here in Massachusetts. I was set to be a first-generation college student, so my parents were just glad I was going somewhere. Everything changed when I met Dean. His crystal blue eyes and black hair had me hooked, but then came the promises. He was set to be an engineer and got a full ride. His parents were so happy that they literally bought him a condo as a graduation gift. "Come with me," Dean offered come the end of summer. "I'll take care of you. You don't have to work or get a degree in something you hate." He grabbed my hand and rubbed my palm. "Just come with me to Maryland. You can keep up the condo. I'll go to school and work. If you decide you want to go to school, the community colleges there are better anyways," he encouraged. "I don't know, Dean. My parents are really excited about me going to college here," I contemplated. "Your parents control you too much. You've never even left this state. In Maryland, it'll just be me and you." And the next thing I knew, I was packing my bags and disappointing my parents. We made the nearly 7.5 hour drive, stopping for snacks and blasting oldies on the way. The whole way there, we didn't argue once, which surprised me. That was when I realized our whole relationship, we had never even fought or argued once. Every time I disagreed with him, he countered it calmly with logic, and did the same thing if he disagreed with me. I spent the last 3 months thinking he was the perfect guy, but was I just a pawn in his game? 2 months passed, and I was settling into my new life with Dean. We still never fought, and I lived just like he said I would. Just me and him. But a girl gets lonely, and I wanted friends. "Hey, darling," I said to Dean one night while we were laying in bed. "Yes, my love," he asked. "I love living with you, but I'm starting to feel lonely. You're the only person I know in this town. It'd be nice to have a friend."
"Oh, sure, Valerie," I sensed hostility. "You can go out and I'll stay here. Soon enough, you'll just not come back and forget about me," he snapped.
"No, Dean, I didn't mean it like that." I went to grab his hand, and he pulled away harshly. "Just someone in addition. I wouldn't leave you here. I would just hang out with him when you were busy," I assured.
"So an open relationship," he hissed, shooting me a dirty side eye.
"Oh my God, no!" I shouted. "I said a friend."
"I should be all you need, Valerie."
He smiled and nodded his head slowly. I stared at him for a second. A slim, haunting smile plastered on his nodding head. His eyes now more gray than blue.
"Okay," I nodded.
For a while, I didn't press the issue. I did laundry, I cooked, I cleaned. When he was happy one day, I brought up joining a yoga class while he was at work, and this time he agreed. Now I cooked and cleaned, and on Tuesdays, I went to yoga. Our relationship was going surprisingly well. So much that Dean began getting me weekly flowers again. One day, Dean brought home the most amazing, beautiful vase of flowers for me. The vase was a tan, sandy color. Now, call me basic, but it was perfect in combination with a dozen roses, and he kept them coming. Until one day, I got invited to a party. "You could even come too," I offered after I told him.
"Nah," he said. "That's not really my thing." He shrugged and went back to his video game. My stomach dropped.
"Well, do you mind if I go for a bit? The girls at yoga were hoping I'd be there."
"You said I was all you needed. He looked up. You said you were all that I needed, I opposed.
I'm so done with this shit, Valerie. I don't understand why I'm not enough for you.
Jesus, Dean, I'm done. It's a party I even invited you to. I'm allowed to have a life outside of you.
The next thing I knew, he was screaming, fuck this, and breaking everything in sight, punching walls and packing himself a bag.
You can keep the shitty condo. I'll mail you the mortgage papers, he yelled as he smashed a snow globe off the mantle.
Have a nice life with your shitty yoga friends and your shitty party. He looked over to my vase, clenched a fist, and then released. His bloody knuckles dripped.
Bon voyage, Betty, he screamed as he slammed the front door.
That was the last time I ever saw Dean. The cops showed up about 20 minutes later because they got a call of breaking glass and thought someone's house was being burglarized. I told them what happened, and they said there was nothing they could do. He hadn't hurt me, and since he owned the house, there wasn't a case of vandalism. They suggested that I take his gift to the condo and move on, cleaning his mess myself. Two weeks later, I woke from my rotting on the couch to a knock on the front door. I opened it to a well-dressed woman holding a manila folder.
Valerie Marsh, she said when I answered.
I nodded.
These are the mortgage papers you and Mr. Phillips discussed. They should be easy enough for you to fill out and take to the courthouse. Should you need help, we have a clerk who works by the hour.
She passed me the folder and turned as her heels clicked down the sidewalk. As soon as I got inside, I looked around the condo. It had been 2 full weeks since I'd cleaned anything, including myself. I set the folder beside the now wilted and rotting roses on the kitchen island. Walking to my bathroom, I realized I never got to cleaning all the stuff that Dean destroyed. The water from the snow globe had dried up now. A pile of glass and glitter lie in the front of the mantle. First I'll clean myself, then I'll clean this up. Time to stop moping, I thought. After washing away 14 days of self-loathing, I decided the first task I should tackle was throwing away the flowers. I looked down at the once beautiful and vibrant dozen, now dull and dark. A sickeningly sweet but moldy stench to them. Death and rotting. I grabbed them by the stems, careful not to prick my finger on their decaying thorns. A thick black sludge dripped off their rotten ends into the vase with a plop, expelling the stench of death into the air even more. I threw the roses into the trash and tried not to let my vomit follow. I looked down into the large empty vase. The blackish green sludge was crawling up the sides, staining it with a nasty hue. I gazed into the murky water, so dirty that I couldn't even see my reflection. I brushed my hair away from my face and just then realized the blood dripping from my middle finger.
Damn it!
I held it at eye level to get a better look when the drop plopped into the vase. As soon as it hit the murky water, something surged upward. A long black figure erupted from the water with a violent splash. I rubbed my eyes, sure I was seeing something, only to open them and see ripples of waves. Something was living in the vase. I bandaged my bloody finger, taking care not to get any infection from whatever the hell was in there. Then I took a clear lid from my biggest pot and put it over the vase. The last thing I needed was the shit getting out. Then I took to the internet. I googled several stupid questions that yielded no results and then decided either I was going crazy or I was having an individual experience. The thought of just going over to the vase and poking around for something sent a chill down my spine, but I couldn't just dump it if there was something living in there. I had to find a solution. Back home, Dean had a fish, but it died right after we moved here. Turns out an 8-hour drive can stress them out. Well, Dean never threw away the tank, so I did what any animal lover would do at the sight of something living, and I tried to help it. I set up the tank on my counter in front of the window, so hopefully I could see through the water. If I still couldn't see through it enough to tell what this thing was, I would fill it up with fresh water and make it more clear. My stomach dropped. Carefully, I walked over to the vase. Once the thing that made me so happy, now taunting me with darkness, I took a deep breath. I carried the lid and the vase over next to the tank. With trembling hands, I removed the lid and caught sight of the green band-aid on my finger. Whatever was in there, it was attracted to my blood. I pulled the band-aid off and dangled my finger over the vase, squeezing out just a little bit of blood. A second passed, and then just like the first time,
A slimy black figure darted to the top, made a splash, and disappeared back into the darkness. I took a deep breath in and held it, then, carefully as possible, lifted the vase that now felt like it weighed 100 pounds. Slowly, I poured a mix of dark green sludge and thick water into the tank, watching for something to come out. Then, just as I was almost through, it slithered from the vase into the tank. Gotcha. I got down to the level of the counter and put my face up against the glass, peering in. At first, I didn't see anything. The water began to go still, and truthfully, I began to lose interest in the waiting. I looked back at my finger, the blood beginning to soak through the band-aid now that I'd pissed it off. My thoughts wandered until they were interrupted by a sudden sharp thump on the panel of glass. My head shot up quickly, sending a sharp pain down my spine. The creature was now banging on the glass. Tap, 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 tap. I got down to look at it again, this time able to see its cold yellow eyes and slithering black tongue. Every few seconds, dipping down and tapping its head on the glass. Tap, 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 tap. It was trying to communicate. I held my finger up to the glass, showing him or her, and it just stopped for a second, peering at me with sad eyes. It was just hungry. Who knows how long it had been living in the vase? Did Dean put it there? I removed the band-aid one final time, dug my nail into the gash, and pressed out a long stream of blood into the water. The creature thrashed, resembling sharks in a feeding frenzy. Bits of sludge and black water dripped from the tank onto the marbled counter. I jerked my hand away from the tank and rushed to get another band-aid. The next thing I knew, I was in the car heading west toward the local feed store. I purchased 50 live goldfish and a smaller tank.
You can't put 50 goldfish in this small of a tank, the cashier advised while smacking her gum and shaking her blonde ponytail.
Half of them will be dead by tomorrow, I stared at her. They're feeders. She didn't speak another word to me for the rest of the transaction. For all she knew, I had several turtles at home. When I pulled into the driveway, I turned around to make sure that no one was following me, like she would have called the police for animal cruelty or something. But creatures have to eat, and I'm sure as hell not feeding it my blood forever.
For a few days, feeding the little fish worked. It seemed to keep the creature satisfied. I started to feel bad for referring to her just as a creature, so I gave her a name. Betty. After what he rudely called me when he left. Betty ate 10 fish morning and night, thrashing around in her feeding frenzy while I watched from above, dropping one in, then another. Then, I started to name the fish I fed her.
Here you go, Betty. This one's name is Dean.
I snatched another fish up by the tail from the tiny tank, dangling it up to my eyes as it flopped, desperate for water. And this one's name is Dean. I plopped another fish into the water. All of their names are Dean. After all, he's the one who got me into this mess in the first place.
After a few days of feeding and talking to Betty, I decided to get a better look at her by finally filling up the tank with more fresh water. I started by emptying the water little by little with a cup, scared that she would bite me if I got too close or took too much. When it was about half full, which took longer than I would like to admit, I filled it up again with fresh water. Betty thrashed and swam a bit as I poured more water in. I didn't want to pour too much and hurt her, so I watched and only put as much water as I needed to see how she really looked. I peered down into the water at the roughly foot-long, sleek black serpentine creature I had respectfully named as Betty. Her skin was shiny and dark, so dark that it blended in with the shadows of the tank. I bent down, looking at her. Her small, piercing, almost menacing eyes. Her mouth, slightly jarred, exposing a row of needle-like teeth. Watching her move in an undulating pattern under the water was both mesmerizing and eerie. I wanted to look away, but I couldn't help just to watch. When Betty tired of fish, I ended up going to live feeder mice.
So what, you need feeder mice now?
The same bottle blonde questioned.
Why does it matter? They're feeders. Do you ask everyone who buys them what they're for?
Well, most folks don't escalate from fish to mice either.
She looked at me for a moment before ringing them up.
What are you feeding anyways?
She raised her eyebrows.
Just ring up the mice, Sarah. I peered down at her name tag. She smacked her gum one more time in an attempt to bite her tongue.
Have a great day, ma'am,
she muttered without a smile in a condescending tone. I took the little box of 5 mice home, the most they would sell at one time. If the mice didn't do it, I'd just go back for rats anyways. The worst part about the mice is the entire way home, they just squeaked. It's like they knew their time was coming.
Here you go, Betty. I got you another Dean. I threw the little mouse into the tank. It swam around for a second, then Betty's swimming stopped. The next thing I knew, she was splashing and the mouse was gone. But I think I might have closed my eyes for a second. I looked down once the splashing stopped and suddenly felt a rush of nausea. I turned over to the sink and retched. Something about seeing another creature die to become lunch made me lose mine. After that, I just put the mice in and walked away. I didn't have the heart to watch. Another day passed and I decided to go back and get more mice or even a rat. Betty was growing in size and I wanted to be prepared. I don't know how I settled on keeping her, but I didn't know what else to do when I felt bad. It was almost like we were bonded. Both of us, the aftermath of Dean's mess.
I'm sorry, ma'am, the clerk who normally handled the mice said. We have you on a do not sell list.
And why would I be on that? I snapped.
We reserve the right to refuse service, ma'am. Some employees have felt, well, startled by your frequency here and some of the comments you've made.
Oh, so I can't feed my snake because your little checker can't take a joke? That's bullshit!
Policy, ma'am. Maybe try frozen mice or pellets from another store.
He looked behind me.
Next customer.
Now what the fuck was I supposed to do? I took the little dignity I had left and walked out.
Have a nice day,
Bottle Blonde Sarah called out as I was leaving. And that just about did it for me. I glanced at the door. 2 hours till closing. I walked to my car, put it in drive, and drove to the alley behind the shop. Then, I waited. The time passed rather quickly. I needed the time to think and plan. Then, a stray cat walked by, and it hit me. Once 5 o'clock hit, I stood where I could see both doors in Bottle Blonde's car. When I saw her walking, head down, keys in her hand, I knew it was time. I splashed some water in my eyes and opened my trunk. Oh my gosh, finally! I went over to her. Please don't hurt me! She cried, throwing her hands up. No, no! I said, looking into her eyes, showing her my watery irises. I've been waiting for somebody who works here to come out, I cried. I was leaving earlier and I saw a cat in the alley. I think it's dying. You have to come help me, I pleaded.
I don't know about that. You'll have to take it to the vet, she responded harshly while reaching to put her keys in the door.
No, no, please. I can't get it. I felt myself start to actually cry from desperation at this point. Come on, just help me for a second. It's just right over there. She stared at me, obviously trying to decide if I were lying.
I only have a minute, she caved. I led her over to a spot near the car.
I have a blanket in the trunk, I pointed. It's in those bushes over there.
I'm severely allergic to cats. That's why I have a snake, I lied. She hesitantly took the plaid blanket I offered and trudged slowly toward the bushes. As soon as she turned her back, I grabbed my jumper cables from the trunk and followed behind her.
I don't see anything, she scoffed. Just look further back. It's a little gray cat.
She got down on her hands and knees. I bent down beside her.
I think I see it, she sputtered.
I took the jumper cables from behind my back, looped them, and then in one swift motion pulled the loop over her head. She sat up quickly and I tightened my grasp, pushing my fist deeper into the back of her neck. She dropped the blanket, reaching up for the red and yellow cables, desperate for air. Her legs thrashed, then her arms. Finally, she went limp. I dropped her to the floor and jumped back.
I just killed a woman.
My breathing labored as I reached for my face. I grabbed the blanket, covered her open-eyed stare with it, picked her up by the waist, and plopped her in my trunk.
Fuck!
I screamed as soon as I got into my car, banging my fist on the wheel.
When I got home, I backed the car right up to the front door. I got out and unlocked it, grabbed a bigger blanket, and opened my trunk. I looked down at what I had done. Her lips purple, neck covered in red and purple welts, the jumper cables still wrapped around her, her mouth still gaping from the last scream that left her body, her eyes still open and bloodshot.
"I'm so sorry," I said to her. "You'll see now that I'm feeding more than just a snake."
I grabbed her from the couch and put her into the bathtub, holding her legs to make sure she fit. Then, I went to the kitchen and grabbed the sharpest knife that I had. I'll spare you the details. After that, I grabbed Betty and her tank and dumped the water into the tub with that Sarah girl. I didn't have the courage to go back into my bathroom until the next day. When I woke up the next morning, I turned on the news. A few segments in was a missing persons report for a 19-year-old Sarah Waterman. She was last seen leaving her work at the feed store, her car found to have never left the parking lot. I should have went back and moved the car. This is when I realized that I was in too deep. It was only a matter of time until they connected the dots to the customer they had refused being her fault and set me with a motive, and I'm sure they'll be here soon. As for now, and why I'm leaving you this, I'm going to join Sarah. It's only fair. You'll find her belongings and her keys on my kitchen counter, probably where you found this recording. Please, tell her family I'm sorry. I never meant for it to end up like this. Something happened to me during my time with Dean and when he left. There was always a darkness in him. Deep down, I always knew it. I tried to make it work, but it consumed me. I'll never know if he put whatever Betty is in the vase, or if it's something that grew from the darkness he and I held together. Please, don't hurt Betty. That's not her fault. Use her to figure out what's going on. And let this be a warning. Don't let the darkness consume you. You have no idea how fast it can slither inside you and take over your life. Today's episode was written and read by Juniper Rain Gallegos, and visual depiction is posted at Juniper's Cabinet on Instagram and our RSS feed. Be sure to follow our socials and stay tuned for more. Full credits are in the show notes. Juniper's Cabinet of Curiosities is a Juniper Rain production. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you guys next Friday.